This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Friday edition of the Steve Jones Show. I'm Todd Hummel. We are here in the Sunbury Motors studio on News Radio 1070 WKOK. We are sponsored by NIL Game Changers, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and, of course, Sunbury Motors. We have two guests scheduled for today. Nick Faribault is going to join us at 1:35. We're going to discuss the Steelers and Steelers OTAs with him. And then at 2:05, Gabe Sinicropi is going to join us from the Williamsport Crosscutters. The MLB Draft League kicks off next week. I think Steve said his first game is Thursday in State College for the Spikes. I believe Williamsport opens Tuesday. Sunday they're having their Meet the Cutters Day from 3 to 5 up at Bowman Field. So it should be a fun show today. What else is going on? We talked a little bit yesterday. Steelers Grove won their third straight district 2-4 Class 5A sub-regional. They will host a state playoff game Monday at 4:30. They will play Lampeter Stroudsburg. My big thing this week was Tuesday. I was at Williamsport up at Elm Park. Midwest won their first ever district softball title 14-2 over Loyal Sock in six innings. The Mustangs will host their first round state playoff game against Littlestown. And I guess I have breaking news because before we come on the air, I was texting with Mr. Catrillo, and Matt Catrillo and SECV8 and those guys are going to be at the Midwest game on Monday with Littlestown to they'll show you'll get a chance to watch the Mustangs on TV. The other two games, Mount Carmel will be up at Mid Valley in 3A baseball, and Danville in 4A baseball. They will host, or no, they don't host. They're at Central Columbia against Scranton Prep, the District 2 runners up. So, going to be a pretty busy Monday for local sports people. That includes me. I will be out at Midwest for the Mustangs game. And so should be a fun Monday. And, you know, talking about the Midwest Mustangs, it made me chuckle that this has probably been one of the best sports weekends in Midwest School District history between, you know, Friday the Mustangs upset the undefeated top seed in the 3A playoffs, and then Saturday Cameron Pyle repeated as the girls 2A 300 hurdles champion at Shippensburg in the PIAA championships, and 3200 relay team of Andon Atkins, Ben Hummel, Connor Stoltzlis, and Wyatt Nelson also claimed a gold medal. And they were cruising for a while. They had a shot for a while at one of the records that I got to witness in my career, and that's Lewisburg's state record 3200 team from back in the early 2000s. Key, or that's a poor pun because his nickname's Key, but led by Chris Spooner, who later ran at Duke. So yeah, it was a great weekend out at Midwest, and should be a fun one on Monday when they face Littlestown, who is the District 3 runner-up, 15-8. The Mustangs are 15-6 going into that state playoff game. What else is going on right now? No, like we talked a little bit about Seals Grove, you know, winning yesterday. The Seals have been on a run since, you know, they struggled a little bit in the first round, in their first round district game against their rival Shikellamy. They needed two runs late to beat a Braves team that I believe only won three or four games this year, and that was actually their biggest challenge so far in districts. Beat Wall and Paul Pack 7-1 in the semis, and Pittston 5-0 yesterday. Josh Domoraki's been on a heck of a run for the Seals the past couple weeks. Got the rhythm relief against Schick, and I believe Wall and Paul Pack, and through 6 2/3 innings yesterday before hitting the pitch count and getting the win through a two-hitter in that one. It's going to be – what else? Huh? Phillies had their first three-game skid of the year, and that kind of you know, that was a little surprising, but they ran into – you know, it's always tough to play out in the West Coast, and the Giants got a little – the Giants – that game with throwing inside the Harper and things like that. And now the Phillies are back on the air tonight. I believe they play the Cardinals. Yeah, that first pitch is 6:40 on our sister station, Eagle 107.3. It should be fun. And this, you know, this is the weekend before the Phillies head over to London. They'll be in London next weekend to play the Mets. Hopefully the Mets did win yesterday. Hopefully my Mets are playing a little better when they get to London next week. And if you get a chance, there's a cool commercial that I believe MLB did to advertise for the games next weekend. It's Sonny and Philadelphia fan. It's Chase Utley and Bryce Harper at the beginning, and it's Rob McElhenney. I can't think of what his character's name is, and It's Always Sonny has started writing letters to Bryce, and it's pretty humorous if you get a chance to see it. I saw it on X, but I'm sure there's various other places. I'm sure it'll also be on TV to advertise a series for next week. So keep an eye out for that one. That's a pretty fun one. We do have a NBA basketball championships set. The Boston Celtics, of course, finished off a sweep of the Pacers earlier this week. And then Luka Doncic and the Mavericks finished off a 4-1 victory over the T-Wolves last night. And was not a good night for if you were a T-Wolves fan. I feel bad for Neil Coulong. I hope he didn't stay up to watch it, and he just heard about it this morning rather than watch it, because the Wolves were down 30 at some points last night, and it just didn't look like – it's a little hard to say that they weren't ready to play in, you know, game five of the Western Conference Finals. But I just think – you know, expending all that energy to go to seven games to beat the Nuggets, you know, I'm thinking the altitude probably caught up to them a little bit from that series the previous round. And, you know, Dallas is such a tough matchup for everybody, and I just think that the Timberwolves ran out of gas. And I'm wondering how this NBA Finals goes. It pains me to say this as a Sixers fan. I got to think, you know, it's weird to me how little love the Celtics get nationally. It seems like most of the national media is more – feels like they've gotten lucky with, you know, some of the injuries with the teams they've played against. You know, they got the Heat without Jimmy Butler and their injuries. The Knicks got beat up and ended up, you know, Brunson ended up hurt in Game 7. And then the Pacers – I don't think, you know, Halliburton was hurt for the last part of those games. But I just had this feeling, I feel like more than anywhere else, the NBA, it seems to go in cycles where, you know, you get to the Eastern Conference Final, you lose that, you know, you have to lose in the playoffs, and then it kind of teaches you how to win. Ah, yeah. I think we are at the point where the Celtics have learned how to win, and this is their season.
Well, same thing with Dallas. Dallas has learned how to win. But you're right about the Celtics. It's been almost a comical commentary on the Celtics. Well, Jimmy Butler didn't play. True. Donovan Mitchell got hurt in the middle of the series. True. Tyrese Halliburton got hurt in the middle of the series. True. But you do know that Kristaps Porzingis has not played at all in the last two series and most of the Miami series. So the Celtics have had a guy out. It seems to be forgotten.
It's It's kind of odd. And I don't understand why, as somebody as, I don't know, innocuous as Jason Tatum engenders so much dislike for some reason.
Yeah.
It's strange to me. I don't understand what Jason Tatum has done to people.
Yeah, I don't know. When the Celtics made the finals a couple of years ago against Golden State, he was on a real roll in the playoffs, and he didn't have a great final. And people do not forget when you get to the championship round and don't do well. So let's take, for example, Alex Rodriguez. Until 2009, Alex Rodriguez in the playoffs had been a forgettable entity. But in 2009, he wasn't. But before then, in the big moments, the feeling was Alex Rodriguez came up, in a baseball sense, small. Okay. People don't forget that stuff along the way, you know, and ask why. But now you have, he's played well again. Jaylen Brown's played great. And it's amazing, they got Brown and Tatum in the draft, each with the third overall pick. And each time the team drafting in front of them, the two teams drafting in front of them, were the Sixers and the Lakers in each draft. How about that?
Sorry, I was having Markelle Fultz for last specs instead of Jason Tatum.
Right.
Sorry.
But remember, I think it was Lonzo Ball was the second overall pick by the Lakers, right?
Yeah. Or LaMelo. No, Lonzo. I always forget which one's
Lonzo
the older one
Ball
is.
Was, who's now with the Bulls. LaMelo's actually been a good player with Charlotte. But, you know, that's when they got him. Well, it's the same thing with Jaylen Brown. When he was picked, he was third overall. And the Sixers had the first pick in that draft. Right? And the Lakers had the second pick in that draft. And, of course, the Sixers ended up taking Ben Simmons. And we know how that's turned out. And the Lakers took Brandon Ingram. Now, they packaged Ingram and put him in the trade for Anthony Davis. And Ingram, by the way, to his credit, has played well for the New Orleans Pelicans. He has. So let's not take away that a guy has played well. But, again, same story. Okay, the Sixers could have had Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. The Lakers could have had Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. They have neither. Okay. So what the Sixers have out of the two drafts, nothing for Fultz. Harden has now moved on to play for the Clippers, so nothing for Simmons. The Lakers have nothing for Lonzo Ball. Out of Brandon Ingram, they do have Anthony Davis. That's what they have. I mean, you have to be able to, and these are drafts, by the way, by Danny Ainge, who's now with Utah. Danny Ainge made those picks. And, I mean, that's the part that is amazing about it. There's no doubt that Simmons and Ingram have both been all-stars, as is Jaylen Brown, and Sabonis and Siakam and Murray. They're all in that draft in 2016. But your ability to judge talent is... You can't put a price on that. You can't put a price on it. And Mike Rhodes and I were talking about that today, along with Rob Crimmo, who's the head basketball coach at St. Francis. We were talking about this, about judging talent. And Rob had five freshman starters last year at St. Francis. He's going to lose two of them to the portal. All right. And I told him, the two of them, a quote that Joe Paterno had, and Joe told me. I said, look, Joe always told me, he says, you know what? He says, I always tell the staff, don't sit there and think about the people we don't have. Worry about the people we do have. You have to take an attitude of yesterday's news, but it really does start with your evaluation of the talent and what you see in it. And if you properly evaluate talent, you're going to get winners. And for example, Mike Rhodes properly evaluated Ace Baldwin from day one. He properly evaluated Nick Kern from day one. He properly evaluated DeMarco Dunn, Zach Hicks, and Puff Johnson in the transfer portal. Right? Now we're going to see, for example, how things end up working out with the other people that he has. But I think that based on what I've seen so far, that's going to work out fine. Same thing with James Franklin in terms of judging talent in football. You have to have the ability to judge the talent, then develop and have it add up to even more. Because you have to take three stars and make them four stars. You have to take four stars and make them five. That's the development part of it. But you have to at least initially evaluate that they have the potential to be fours and fives for you. And for the most part, you're not going to hit on all of them. But for the most part, James Franklin has properly done that. Joe Paterno properly evaluated talent for years. And based on some of the people that we've seen over the years that Bill O'Brien brought in, he did the same thing. That's the key to having the right people at the right time. The right people at the right time can evaluate talent. That's what you need to do. NBA level, same thing. Danny Ainge properly evaluated Jaylen Brown out of Cal and Jason Tatum out of Duke. And that's what they have. But Brad Stevens, this is what Brad Stevens did. Brad Stevens properly looked at his basketball team a year ago and said, I have too many of the same guy. So he dealt Marcus Smart away because he had too many guys that played. Tatum plays the same as Brown. Brown played the same as Marcus Smart. In a lot of ways, Derek White plays the same way. You know what I mean? Like that. Then he brought in guys that were a bit different. Kristaps Porzingis, who has not played in the playoffs except for a couple games against Miami, is a different kind of player than what the Celtics have had. Right? He's different. Jrue Holiday is a different player than what the Celtics have had. So they kept the core group of guys that essentially play the same way and added in guys that play a bit differently, so the Celtics weren't running out the same kind of player over and over again. And I think that's been important. Brad Stevens is responsible for that. And I think Mazzulla's done a good job with him. And as for Dallas, look, they acquired Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving has been essentially a cancer everywhere he's gone. He was a cancer with the Celtics, the Nets, even to a point with the Cavaliers. Yet he has gone, to his credit, to Dallas and has fit in seamlessly. And Doncic has been he is just a terrific inside-out player. And then in the draft, when people aren't going after big men in the draft, they drafted Derek Lively with their first pick. And he has changed them defensively because of what he has been able to do. He's changed them defensively. And that's been terrific for what he's done. And of course, and you know that for everybody around here, Derek is, special. He grew up in Bellefonte. We know his mom's story and so forth. I mean, I just came back from the Coaches versus Cancer tournament. And I was interviewed today about it, and I specifically mentioned her because she went through that, 10-year battle with it, 10, 12-year battle with it, at least 10 years. All right, fought courageously and, unfortunately didn't make it. But as I pointed out, to relate it to Coaches versus Cancer, I said, we keep talking about survivors. I said, and what she had, I said, she may not have seen her son graduate from high school. She may not have seen her son go to Duke. She may not have seen her son get drafted in the first round. She may not have seen her son play with the Dallas Mavericks. I said, if it wasn't for the money that's been put in and the treatment and the research that allowed her to get a chance to see that. I said, it didn't end well, but maybe we should think about all the years it bought to allow her to see Derek play. And Derek's made a big difference for the Mavericks as a player, as has P.J. Washington. So, yeah.
I thought it was amusing that P.J. Washington was the guy that was guarding Cat for the Hornets when he scored 60 earlier this year and then shut him down for the Mavericks in this series.
Well, yeah, that's because it was actually go time, and that's not...
effort level.
It's Carl Anthony Towns' issue is... you know, we talk about the ability to come up big when it, in big moments, big games. He's never done that. That's not been his forte. We just saw the passing of Bill Walton. What made Bill Walton great was that Bill Walton in the biggest moments came up huge.
21 to 22.
College, pros, you know, UCLA, Portland Trailblazers, the Celtics, he came up big. Right, that's why he's revered as one of the great players of all time. Carl Anthony Towns has never been able to do that. Now, he came back and played a good Game 5 at Dallas. Was it Game... No, Game 4 at Dallas. He did play well in that game. Right,
and, so and Game 7 against Denver.
And Game 7 against Denver he did. So let's give credit where credit is due. But in the other games, for the most part, he was just another guy. And that is what you need to avoid when you're in the playoffs. You cannot be, when you're considered to be a star-level player. Now, I think he's partway between a really good player and a star. He's halfway between there. But everybody talks about him as a star. When you're a star, you have to come up big. All right? Okay. Opening half hour brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Great to see Tom and Kyle Mertz last night. And the Sunbury Motors staff at Coaches vs. Cancer. Proud to say that I am a customer who proudly bought a great vehicle from Sunbury Motors. You will get the same treatment as I did, which was great. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
You want your young athlete to get the most out of life and NIL. You need a roadmap, a strategic approach. NIL Game Changers help student athletes earn what they learn in their collegiate journey. Driven by former student athletes and coaches who work as NIL sports agents and content media designers, they'll guide both student and family, starting with high school students looking toward college and those already in college. Get a seasoned team of marketing experts with a background in athletics and coaching. Visit NILGameChangers.org, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this half hour brought to you by NIL Game Changers. That's right, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities for both athletes and businesses. Get your journey started today at NILGameChangers.org. Great to be in the Sunbury Motors Studio on this Friday. Now, we have what, guest-wise, we are where here, Todd?
We have Nick Fairbaugh from Pittsburgh Steelers Now.
Hello, Nick. How are you doing, my friend? Great to have you with us.
I'm doing very well, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Good. Well, it's great to have you on, by the way. And let's start with the OTAs. And I want to start with the thought of the OTAs. There's been some talk lately, Nick, about, you know what, maybe we'll expand training camp. You know, I'm talking about the players' side of it. And let's skip the spring stuff. What's your thought on that and the value of OTAs?
Yeah, I think OTAs lay the foundation for what you're going to do in training camp. But I do think it's a little odd, personally, that they take 5 to 6 weeks off. I think that's a little weird because you lay the foundation in May and early June, but then you go home for 5 weeks, and who knows what happens. I know that, you know, there's a thought that a lot of these guys are going to show up to training camp, you know, overweight or out of shape because maybe they push it back 5 weeks. From what I know and from who I've talked to, you know, in the kind of football world, the Steelers players, a lot of these guys overtrain during that 5 weeks off, and it can lead to some, you know, early injuries. And we see a lot of guys early in training camp, you know, pull hamstrings. A lot of that's due to overcompensation. That's part of what the study showed. So I think, you know, moving it back and making it one consolidated thing where it goes into OTAs and then into training camp, I think it's a good move personally. You can still have the rookies come in early and really get to know each other during rookie minicamp. I don't think you move that. But I don't think OTAs need to happen right after that. Where you kind of have this five-week layover that doesn't really make sense because a lot of guys sometimes overtrain and actually come out worse for it. And there's not, you know, a clear vision for what all the guys are training for. They're training on different things, and it can really kind of, I guess, dilute the messaging, dilute kind of the training. So having that one singular focus, I think, you know, from June through the end of January, I think that actually would help them. So I think a lot of players are going to be in favor of this.
All right, so let's get to the rookie part of it. How valuable, in your opinion, Nick, are OTAs for rookies, and how important are OTAs for the evaluation of rookies by the coaching staffs?
I think maybe not as much evaluation. I think from a mental standpoint, I'm sure that that's really important because you're installing your offense or defense during the time, special teams as well. So installing that and seeing kind of their retention of the knowledge that they get is important. I think what's more important is, you know, all these veterans being around during OTAs. I think that's really where we kind of see the growth here is. For the Steelers, for example, Troy Faletonu gets to bounce off Isaac Seumalo and James Daniels. These guys all have been in the NFL for six-plus years. I think that is a valuable tool. You don't get that. You know, you cannot show up to OTAs and you can train on your own with your trainer wherever you are, but you don't get the bounce-off ideas off a veteran, off another guy. You know, am I doing this right? How do you run this route and this kind of look? All of that different kind of minutia and nuance, I think, is why OTAs is so important. It's a team-building aspect. There's a lot of new, too. With the Steelers, obviously, you know, you see the quarterbacks and the new offense. So there's a lot of new, so you get to talk to the coaches, kind of see what they want. And then, you know, when you go back specifically during this five-week period that they're going to have, then you know how to train specifically for your offense. I think that's where it's really valuable. Not as much in, say, evaluating what happens on the football field, but how they do things. The retention of it all. That's where I think this is really valuable, and getting that mentorship among the locker room, I think, is another thing that's very important at OTAs.
And of all the years, this is a year where they have the two new quarterbacks in there, Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. What's the intrigue surrounding them, and then the possibility that's been at least floated that the Cordell Stewart slash position comes back because of Fields?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of intrigue around these guys. You know, it's the different skill set from what they had. I think that both these guys can air the ball out all over the football field. I think their arm talent sticks out. That's the thing, one thing that has really struck out to me. You know, you look at Russell Wilson, even if he's not what he was in his heyday in Seattle, the arm talent, the ability to throw that deep ball is still fantastic. He's got that. It is not gone. The deep ball's accuracy is fantastic. Justin Fields is a guy that could throw it really all over the field, all over the yard, and you're going to get it into, you know, tight windows. So I think that's where intrigue comes from. There's more arm talent, so you can do more different things with your scheme. I think with Justin Fields specifically on the ground game, I think there's going to be a package for him. You know, I think you have to. You think he's going to play like wide receiver, you know, like Cordell did back in his day, but I do think you're going to see Justin Fields as a wildcat quarterback. You're going to see him running read option. You're going to see him even throwing out of that because he can, and he's such a talented runner. He is a dynamic football player, very tough to bring down. You see him in person. He is built. His lower body is extremely well built, and he's tough to bring down. You can understand why he runs through arm tackles, and he runs with the physicality that most quarterbacks are not willing to do. So that's going to be a thing. I'm very certain of it because Justin Fields is going to be one of their best weapons with the ball in his hands. And if you want that run game to be enhanced with Jaylen Warren and Najee Harris, You're going to want another guy in there that can really add another level to it. And Arthur Smith's been great with the quarterback run game. He had Marcus Mariota, did a great job with him at the helm. So I think Justin Fields is going to have a package there. And if he eventually starts, I also think, you know, that will be a big part of the game. It will be the quarterback run game.
Well, there's another element, too. Imagine how much time opposing teams are going to have to take in just preparing for it when they could be preparing for something else. I think that's a big element, too.
I think it's an important element. You know, I always think the wrinkle, you know, when the Saints had Taysom Hill during the Drew Brees days, I think, you know, him giving a different look always caused teams to have to compensate time to Taysom Hill, and then you still had Drew Brees dotting it up over the middle of the field with his, you know, precision accuracy. I think, you know, Russell Wilson's going to be such a different quarterback. You're not, you'll see some design runs with him, but, you know, not nearly as much. He's not as dynamic as he was during his Seattle days, but you'll see him, you know, play action, deep ball stuff, stay in the pocket. I think they're going to try and do that. And so that's completely different from, say, read option, you know, off that. Or you can maybe get the bootleg action with Russell Wilson, but you're going to see Justin Fields legitimately actually run a bootleg and take it for himself. And the dynamic ability of these guys out of structure is another thing to where you're going to have to prepare for. So it's just another layer to it. In the run game specifically, you look at how layered this run game is going to be with all that they have. There's going to be a lot to plan for. So I think that's to the advantage of the Steelers. I think they'd be, you know, wise to use Justin Fields and what he brings to the table.
All right. So that's the next part is the draft. They went out and went offensive line, tackle, center. What can this now do to protection? What can this now do potentially to the running game?
Yeah, protection's the big one. I think that it does enhance the run game. I think, you know, Frazier and Fautano are both very athletic guys that work in space. You look at what Arthur Smith likes to do, likes to run a lot of those zone runs where you have to get out in space, go to get the linebackers, go to get those safeties. Fautano is a special athlete for the position. He really is. The way he moves for an offensive tackle, I mean, he looks like he's moving like a tight end at times. He's got that explosiveness and fluidity. So I think that'll help in the run game. They'll be able to, you know, really dial up whatever they want in the run game, because I think the range of the linemen they're going to have, you know, 1 through 5, with Jones obviously being a very great athlete too, and then you have Daniels and Sayamalu and Frazier, all these guys are going to be able to really get out in space and make these really tough blocks that usually as an offensive coordinator you wouldn't call, but they have athletic players that can make these tough blocks. So I think it's going to open up a lot for Jaylen Warren and Najee Harris and be, you know, tricky with what they want to do. I think in pass pro that's the big thing, because you look at Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, both of these guys were number 1 and 2 respectively in time to throw. They held the ball the most. They got sacked a ton because they run into pressure. So I think the more stable your offensive line is, the more likely it is you'll have Fields and Wilson stay in the pocket. And so I think that is really an important thing for the Steelers, is keeping Wilson and Fields kind of a pan. Now, eventually, they're going to run into sacks. I think that's just something that is unfortunately part of their skill set, and there's going to be some negativity with it, but you want to minimize it, especially with Russell Wilson. If you can put Russell Wilson in the pocket and then, you know, he can air out the deep balls, I think he could really be a solid quarterback. That's what made Sean Payton successful with him as much as he was last year. Yeah. Russell Wilson was contained more in the pocket. So I think when you have better pass protection with, you know, Zach Frazier and Troy Fautano in there, you're going to minimize the negativity of those two guys, and that's really what you want.
What would be your biggest couple of takes out of the Steelers' OTAs moving forward?
Yeah, I think one of the takeaways is Arthur Smith's detail. I think it's much better than Matt Canada. That's not saying much, but I remember last year, you know, a lot of guys telling me how defenses were reading their stuff before the snap. It wasn't hard to kind of decipher what the Steelers were going to do. So there's not as many tells. It's a more diverse kind of skill set that they have in there. You have, you know, multiple tight ends. You can spread them out, condense them, really whatever you want to do. But the detail he actually coaches with, you know, guys aren't left wondering why they're doing this, how they're doing this against this look. Right. I think that's 101 OCing, which is more of an indictment of the predecessor for Smith, but
yes.
I think it's something to note. Another thing that I really have noticed in these OTAs is the locker room leadership that both quarterbacks have taken. Fields and Wilson for whatever you think of them, have been there, done that, know what it's like to be the face of a franchise for multiple years. They know how to operate as a professional, how to lead a locker room. That is very clear. You know, that makes it a lot easier when you have a lot of new around you, whether that's Arthur Smith, yeah, whoever. It makes it a lot easier to consolidate and kind of get into a groove. And so that's really been something. In terms of on the field, you know, I think personally I've only been strengthened in the belief we're going to see a lot of Pat Fryer moves this year. I think that is going to be a big one. He's moving all around the formation, outside, inside, slot. He's running all the different routes. They are using him very similarly to how they use Johnny Smith, Kyle Pitts. You look at how tight ends have done in the past in this offense, and they have done extremely well. I think he's due for a big year and a contract year. He seems locked in, very excited. They're going to really try to unleash his ability this season. And I think the last one that I really have taken to heart is I think Minka Fitzpatrick is going to benefit from the addition of Deshaun Elliott. I think, you know, that's something that's gone under the radar. Minka Fitzpatrick kind of played in the slot, in the box a lot last year, was not as much deep in his safety position, which is where he got a lot of those interceptions, his ball hawking. Elliott's going to take up that role, and Minka Fitzpatrick's going to be back to what he was doing. He was an all-pro. So I think that could be a big boost for the secondary.
And that's huge for them, because if you can free up Fitzpatrick, I think that changes the dynamic of the offense, because his ability to get to the ball has always been impressive to me, and you can do that if you have more freedom to do instead of being locked in.
Absolutely, and I think that's what they took Minka Fitzpatrick into the slot and, you know, at strong safety because they needed the run defense boost with Cam Hayward hurt. And Minka Fitzpatrick's a great box safety, but he's not in the position to make as many plays. And right. I think what really made him dynamic in, say, 2021, 2019, 2020, when he was a guy that you had to account for at every snap, is you didn't know where he was going to line up. And he could be in the box. He could be in the slot. He could be at free safety. He could be a robber in the middle of the field. Didn't do that as much last year. So quarterbacks were a little less concerned about what 39 was. And so when you have to account for where he is on every single snap, it leads to errant decisions. It leads to him getting big plays. And that's, I think, really where things are going to pick it up for the secondary. I think Minka Fitzpatrick getting back to who he is going to be a huge part of this defense, maintaining their level and accelerating what they had last year. He should be a big part of that.
What an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much. Appreciate your time. Love the conversation.
Thanks for having me on, Steve. I appreciate it, as always.
Same here. All right. Now we're going to shift gears, and we're going to talk about minor league baseball next, the MLB Draft League with Gabe Sinacropi. We'll do that in a few moments. This half hour being brought to you by our good friends at NIL Game Changers. Yep, they're the experts in name, image, and likeness, and they'll help you with every opportunity, business or athlete. Go to NILGameChangers.org to start your journey today here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake, a service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Spring has sprung, and it's time to dust off those insurance policies. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855 or visit our website at purdyinsurance.com to see what we can do for you.
All right. Great to have you with us on the show today. I get a text from the suit after yesterday's show. Did I really write the wrong? Jeez. What do you think, I made it up? Oh. How do we get through the day, Todd? How do we get through the day?
1 foot in front of the other.
Barely. Barely. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So, we had a great day, Coaches versus Cancer. It's just had a lot of fun with it. I played with a great group today from HRI, and they're, you know, we just had a lot of laughs, a lot of fun. It's the way it should be. One time I played with a group that absolutely had to win. And by the way, we did win the tournament, so we did win. Okay, but it wasn't fun because you felt like there was pressure on every single shot. And like, come on.
Nothing says charity golf tournament like pressure.
Yeah, it's like, we're all out here just whacking the ball around. What the heck?
Were you all splitting like $10,000?
I think I got $100 at the gift shop.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh. Big roller.
I mean, look, you just want to have fun. I play for fun now. More than anything. I mean, yeah. I mean, do you want to play well? Yeah. Did I play well today? Yeah. I mean, except for three of the four par threes, I didn't. All the other holes, it was one par four, I didn't. So the other 14 holes, I played really well. And the group I play with, I think we ended up like 10 under par or something like that. But we just had a good time. A lot of laughs, kidding each other, ribbing each other. You know, if I missed a putt, I'm not going to listen to any of the games. I said that was my goal. And that's the way a charity outing should be. I saw a lot of people last night. We had a great time. And that's the way these things should be. And the Coaches versus Cancer does it right. They do everything in a first-class way, and that's really cool. Yesterday, I thought the announcement on the kickoff times was about as anticlimactic a story as I've been around in a while. I don't know about you, Todd. Oh, really? So the opener is at noon, which I've known for a month. The second game is at noon, no surprise. Third game, no kickoff. Oh, and by the way, the game later in the year with Illinois, it's either 3:34 or 7:30. Oh, really? So in other words, the only one you eliminated was noon? That was the announcement?
Well, at least you know kind of when to make plans, right?
It's three games.
I don't
And then
know.
The game with Wisconsin is a either or at every time slot. What the heck does that mean? Doesn't mean anything.
I guess it means you're playing at some point, right?
I mean, seriously, Todd, I thought we were going to get the announcement on six games. I really did. Half the schedule. And we ended up getting 2.5.
Was it a function of all the partners still fighting over which games they want yet?
Yeah, but they have a draft.
That's what I mean. They have to know by now, don't they?
There's a formula as to who goes first, second, and third on a given week. The Big Ten put in this draft. It's like the NFL does. You're telling me you don't know? You're telling me you don't know if Penn State USC is a big game? Now, that does, any game that's out there, though, does present an issue because you do not want to be kicking that game off at 9 o'clock local time. So you don't want it on big noon kickoff when they're out there. But you're telling me that, like, somebody didn't jump in and say, it's our week, this is the game we want? Really? And there's nothing in the Big 12, literally nothing in the Big 12, that's going to hold back your ability to pick a Big Ten game first for Fox. Nothing. Which game is going to make you sit there in the Big 12 go, oh, my goodness, there's no matter what's going on in the Big Ten, there's no Texas-Oklahoma game anymore, right? That's in the SEC. So what game is Fox going to sit there in the Big 12 and go, we've got to have that game? Because eventually you'll run out of Colorado games that are any good in the middle of September.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It depends on how late they think Deion's going to be undefeated.
Middle of September.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awful. That's great. I can hear, you know. He'd be calling the show now.
Hey, it's a guest.
It may be a contentious one.
Maybe.
Which may be entertaining in its own right.